Do you feel continually let down by modern media? Do you miss the good old days, back when all that mattered was a good story and not some agenda? Do you have ambitions of picking up a pen and pad and fighting the creative war yourself? Then this is the podcast for you. Each week, I'm going to talk to a creator who said enough is enough and started making the content they wished was out there. Join us as we discuss the ups and downs of the self-publishing world. We want to help empower you to join the Iron Age of media. Welcome to Iron Age Marketing. Welcome, everybody, to Iron Age Marketing. I have on author Storm Young today. She's going to tell us a little bit about herself, and we're going to get into things.
Hi, everybody. I am Storm Young. I am from West Virginia, and I have written two mystery novels that have been read in 7 different countries so far, and I've won a few awards for those, though.
What kind of awards? What is under the belt?
So I won the, well, 2nd place in mystery in the Mid-Atlantic Writing Competition, and then I won the Anne Catherine Flagg Artist of the Year Award for West Virginia, and then I was a finalist for the Best Author in West Virginia last year.
Oh, nice. If you're not noticing it, folks, there's a common theme that's running through a lot of this, and that is West Virginia. Number one, I'm always interested to hear things that come from West Virginia because it's not a state that you hear many positive things about. There's lots of jokes about the type of people that come from there. Personally, it's one of my favorite states in the country to drive through. It's gorgeous. Maybe a little dangerous. When the fog hits, who knows what's going to happen, but it is a beautiful place. And it is kind of like the centerpiece for the stories that you're telling. Mm-hmm. You've chose to keep things very local. And from a marketing standpoint on my end, I think it's absolutely genius. I grew up in a small town in upstate New York, and I can't tell you like how every now and again you'll see somebody like in a novel that had a really good, those people that do the research from, they're a good researcher, and they'll put like little details about small towns in New York, and you're like, oh my God, I know that town. I used to drive through there to get to this other small town. But you've kind of taken it like to another level. You're from this world, and you chose to literally write about the world that you know. That's just brilliant to me. Have there been challenges in choosing that? Because obviously you do live in this world.
Yeah.
And I presume you're still there?
So my husband's military. Okay. And so we travel a lot, but I come home as much as possible.
Okay.
And so, yeah, whenever I'm away, this is my way of stepping back home. Okay. I like to be able to go and be like, oh, I'm in the mountains of West Virginia. And so I like to do my novels and have certain places in the towns and areas like that. So there's like a cafe, and if you go to our area, you can actually see that cafe. Mm-hmm. And I have a Conway Lake in one of my books. There's a Conway Lake here. I wrote my books in hopes that people from around here, or even not from around here, if you come here, you'll be like, hey, I know that location. I can go there. You know, I want people to be able to step into my world for a little bit. And I always portray West Virginia as this beautiful state because it is.
Out of curiosity, are they selling your books at like the tourism like kiosks on the interstate?
Not yet. I was hoping they would pick it up, and they didn't. And I reached out to them, and I haven't heard anything back yet.
Because I know like that feeling of like the Easter egg, like of just, oh my God, like that place, like I know that place, and it's certainly like a fun thing as a reader to come across.
Yeah.
I know I've read Stephen King novels and stuff where he's like talked about towns in upstate New York because they're a lot like the towns where he grew up up in Castle Rock. And it's just the thing that I never get over when I see like one of those little things. Like, I knew that convenience store. They're just as creepy as he's making them out to be in the book.
Yeah. I talk about hot chocolate in one of my chapters from that cafe. Mm-hmm. And I saw somebody post a picture on Instagram, like my book with like a hot chocolate. And I thought that was so cool. I was like, that's like a little Easter egg from like the book. And, you know, it helps promote as well.
Absolutely.
That's the one thing that I think is amazing about my book is people will take pictures of the book in the location. which really does help other people see it.
Yeah.
Like, even if you have 10 people, like, on your Facebook, those are 10 people that they didn't see it before.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, no, like I said, when I was first doing my research on it, it's the first thing I noticed is, like, I keep coming back to news stories about West Virginia, and it's like every time I turn around, like, West Virginia. Now, I'm curious, like, since you say it's kind of like a reminder of when you go home, were you like a Scooby-Doo kid out solving mysteries when you were younger, or it's just the kind of story that you gravitate towards?
So I was always like a country girl. I was in the woods. Like, I hung out with my dad and my grandpa a lot. Okay. So I was somebody who was always like out there, but I got it from my grandmother. She would always watch those like old mystery movies on cable TV. And we would sit there and we'd like try to figure out who did what, you know, the whodunit. And I loved those because my mother did not want me to watch them. So that made it even better, right?
Yeah.
So I gravitated towards that. And so I ended up reading after that, like the Nancy Drew stories. And
okay.
that was it for me. Sealed the deal. I knew what I wanted to write one day.
That's awesome. There was a certain amount of murder she wrote and... Walker, Texas Ranger, when I hung out with my grandparents as a kid. But, you know, it is what
it is. It is what it is, yeah.
You know, I personally like Murder, She Wrote. Angela Lansbury, you know, she did a good thing there. In the creation of the book, like, obviously, you'll find a lot more people making books these days.
Mm-hmm.
How did you find, like, the bringing it to market part of it? Did you, like, you have a publisher that you went with? You do it yourself? Like, how did, and even if you found a publisher, how does all that come together? You know, you're as you said, you're from Middletown, nowhere in West Virginia. You don't not like a big wig rubbing elbows with people in New York City or nothing like that.
So actually, I got on TikTok, right? And on TikTok, there's like the certain categories, like the author talk and book talk. And so I found a whole bunch of authors on book talk that talk about, hey, this is how you publish a book. It was like a step by step. And I followed a whole bunch of people and ask a whole bunch of questions because I knew nothing. I had no idea anybody who's ever written a book. And so whenever I decided, hey, I want to do this, I knew absolutely nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So I went from TikTok and YouTube. That's how I figured out. And I did it myself. I did end up reaching out to a few publishers. I queried. I was offered a few like book deals from different people. And I didn't take it. I wanted to try it by myself, and I'm really glad I did.
Well, and you'll talk to anybody. I've known plenty of authors, and one of the things you'll hear from people that do go and get a publisher is, it's all well and good if you get a publisher, you're still going to have to do all of the marketing work yourself. Because unless you're one of like the top 1% of people, they're not putting any money into that. Like, they'll see what they can pull out of you, but that's about it.
Yeah. I heard that too.
So I commend you on your decision to try and go at your own lonesome. I'm curious. I'm not sure if you've mentioned it on the program. We did talk about it before, but you're a mom. You know, you're in an army family or military family. I don't know if we said which branch, but how has that part worked with the author part of things?
So a lot of scheduling, setting aside time. So I am an author, a mother. I'm in college full time working on my master's degree, and my husband's in the army. So I wake up before him. I start writing and getting his stuff ready. And then throughout the day, I wear an AirPod in my ears and I have it set to like text to speak on my phone. And that's how I get a majority of my writing done. My first book was pretty much written on an iPhone. I was scrubbing walls and cleaning the floor with my kid in the background. And so I just edited out everything later. And like, you know, mommy, I need a juice. I would have to edit that out because you could hear it in the AirPod.
Yeah.
But it all ended up playing out and working very well. But she tells people she wrote my books. She loves to go and be like, I wrote this book. My mommy didn't.
I love it. Well, you never really know, you know, it's all in the mix there. And maybe it's, you know, the inspiration from the mommy, I need this, that brings on the... those, you know, detailed scenes and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. She is my little inspiration anyways. She loves to get into like everything. And I like to listen to her play, you know, like pretend and everything. And as I watch her interact, like playing and stuff, I'm like, oh, that's something I could use, or, mm-hmm. you know, something like that. I remember she was playing Barbies, like with her car or something. And she made like a really sharp turn. I'm like, oh, that would be a perfect, like the car turns in the scene. And it's so fun to correlate and stuff like that in my life.
Well, I mean, one thing that I gave it up for a lot of years when I was in high school, because that's what high school does, is beat it out of you. But the idea of whimsy and that childlike wonder and the ability to, you know, frankly, be imaginative in your life. And I feel like we're taught definitely to give up on that at a certain point mm-hmm. in our lives. And I don't know that really serves any of us all that well. And one of the nice things about having a kid around is because you have a kid, you kind of have to step back into that from time to time to be with them.
Yeah.
And I think that's better for all of our lives, just to have that release and be able to work from that place.
I definitely agree. She always brings the life back in me. If I'm feeling down about anything, she's there and a light. I've never seen somebody wake up and just be happy, you know, until you have a child. And that's kids. They just make everything happy and wonderful. And my day is great just because of her. I know, like you said, in high school, it just beats you out. It's like everything. You're like, oh no, I don't want to do this. No, now I wake up. I'm like, I've got to do this for my daughter. And that's why I'm trying to do everything that I am.
Well, I tell people, like, I quit reading in high school because it just beat it out of me. Yeah. I didn't start reading again until probably like my junior year, senior year of college that I like really started. And maybe it's because of that point. It's like, okay, well, I get to read for me. I get to enjoy things for me mm-hmm. that I didn't have for so many years in there. But, you know, I'm glad I did get to pick it back up later in life anyways, because the years away from it would have done even more damage had they gone on too long.
Yeah.
So one of the things I'm interested in is, you chose to go with mystery novels. I'm curious if that has anything to do with like the popularity of true crime, particularly amongst women. Is that something that factored into like your decision to do this, or is it just the personal part of that you gravitated towards these kind of books?
I do like true crime. That is something that I do like and to listen to and stuff, but it's not something that like truly gravitated me towards it.
Okay.
I did want to add in my book, though, because a lot of true crime podcasts now, I hate to say it, but they invade the lives of like the family members. And so I put in my first novel, where I made sure that there was a podcast that like reached out to them about like the murder of this woman. Mm-hmm. And they made it where it was respectful. Hey, you say the victim's name, not the killer's name. Was my main thing, because I feel like victims are overlooked all the time, and I mm-hmm. didn't want that to happen. I wanted to put a little lesson in there.
Well, I mean, in the world of people that are interested in killers, ultimately they end up usually just being a notch on the scorecard of this evil person, you know. And the bottom line is that we all particularly like it's everybody loves a good villain, and that's sad. But, you know, I think that's how, as people, we exercise the parts of ourself that we can't let out into the world and mm-hmm. like live through them. And there, I think even if it is like a real world villain, there's something to the idea of this person living out all of the terrible impulses that you can't.
And I think a lot of people are fascinated with their brains anyways. Like mm-hmm. what made this person tick? What made them like want to do this and steer on that path? I understand the fascination.
Yeah.
I do. But I also know that we need to talk about things, not just what made this person tick and what made them do that.
And there's also an inclination in that particular genre with how much attention do you want to draw to the families of these people that probably in most instances kind of just want things to go away and let them live their lives, because there's a certain degree of, is this opening up the wound over and over again for them? Like, why can't we just go on in peace? So I know that there's definitely a struggle with that in there. I heard a funny joke about this, and it's, you know, is there something, or should we be concerned as men that so many women are attracted to true crime these days? Is this that they planning our downfall? I don't know what this is. I can't speak for my own wife, but she doesn't usually listen to that stuff, so maybe I'm doing my job right.
Sounds like it.
I do want to ask, for all intents and purposes, you do put out a very traditional American type vibe. Have you got caught any flack for that, especially as a young woman out there? There's a lot of opinionated people out there that would certainly say, why you're wasting your time on all this. You should just be chasing down your dreams and doing books and screw everything else. Don't let a man and a kid hold you back. Why are you wasting your time with all that? Is that something that you're cognizant of in how you portray yourself out there? Or, you know, am I too much a product of the world that I grew up in?
No, I completely understand. I've had mix on both, but I think that's the way the internet works anymore. But I'm always just going to be myself. That's who I am. So I am a mother and a wife first. That's always going to be how it is for me. And my author career is second, but that's because I put it second. That is what I prioritize and value the most. And I am, though, at the same time, working up that ladder as fast as I possibly can. I have them right there on the scale, very close to each other, but my family always comes first. And if people don't like that, I don't really care because that's what matters.
Well, as a father and a husband myself, I love to hear that. You know, I do what I do. But I mean, really, what's the point in doing any of this for me if it's if it wasn't for them? I could have gone back to wasting my life playing music and not making money, but having a great old time doing it. You know, it's the family for me that gives me the reason to kind of try and focus on something more than I guess I already have.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to do everything I can for my daughter to be like, hey, that's my mom. She did all of this while raising me, being there for me, and of course, being there for her father. Like my husband is away right now for about like 6 months. So I'm doing all this and still trying to, you know, keep in contact with him and keep the homestead down, you know, and that's what matters.
So I'm curious, did you say you have a daughter?
Yes, a daughter.
And that's something that I always think about, especially is it kind of the world that she's coming up in and the kind of role models that are out there for her. I always like to see people that are, in particular, managing to put family first, but not give up on the other parts of life.
Yes.
Is that something that's important to you?
Yes, absolutely. That's why I'm still working on my degree. I'm working on my master's degree in environmental studies, something completely different than what I'm doing, like, as a quote unquote career, you know?
Yeah.
Because I want to have that safety net as well. I want to be able to work for the EPA or something like that if I need to, if this author career doesn't work for me, because I want to be able to give that to my family. So they're always number one priority. And I want to make sure she sees mom made sure I was taken care of. No matter what, she's taken care of first.
Personally, what I'd recommend, and I know it's a genre that does okay, is I'm a big environmental person myself. I've personally noticed a difference in conceptually how environmentalism looks towards, well, just say people from cities and people that grow up in the country. The way that I see environmentalism tends to be very different than a lot of the other people I know. And I know that some people have done it successfully, but I would love to see people like doing more writing, like from an environmental standpoint about from the perspective of people who live out in the actual woods.
Yeah. Which I think would be really cool to write about. I never really thought about doing that, honestly.
Well, I used to do a Free Markets Green Earth podcast with a friend of mine. And so much of what we talked about was, yeah, we both grew up in upstate New York, and, you know, people are making all these prescriptions for, you know, how to, all of the things that we need to be doing to make the environment get fixed and all that. And it's like, so many of the suggestions, like, well, but I've lived where things are pretty nature-y.
Yeah.
And what you're describing is going to be very dangerous for a lot of people if we do that.
Yeah.
But I think it's because a lot of people just don't, they live so far and so disconnected away from it that they don't ever get to see what that world is like.
Mm-hmm. I completely understand that because like our state is a coal state, right? Like coal power. And I know a lot of people are against coal power, but we're not at a point where we can put in just windmills and stuff right now. We don't have that area ready. So I know my dad works for a coal power plant and they've been talking about shutting it down. I said, what is the game plan? Has anybody really thought of a plan from here? And that's just, no, just shut down the plant.
If you do some reading, I would recommend The World Made by Hand novels. It's a very interesting set of books by this author, James Kunstler. And he's kind of a, maybe like a doomsday kind of guy. He's very much, oh, well, this society is definitely going to collapse. But essentially what he did is he wrote a series of four books. They each take place in a different season. Mm-hmm. So I think it starts in like fall, and then you get winter, spring, and summer, something like to that degree. And in each season, there's like this narrative of all these families living in this world where things are very set up in a rural town where essentially it takes place after like peak oil has been hit. There's no more oil, no more electricity, and some disease swept the earth or something. I think it's his premise. But the thing that was remarkable to me was this idea of focusing on rural life and hard rural life like it used to be. Mm-hmm. And then like the idea of, you know, splitting up this four book series into seasons. And he was very deliberate about describing what those seasons were like. Oh, it was just beautiful to me.
That sounds fascinating. That sounds like something I definitely want to read. And I think everybody should read it if it's like shows what would happen and stuff like that. I think that would be really cool to read.
Well, its idea is if we ever did hit peak oil, a lot of parts of our life are no longer capable. I mean, people forget that like, oh, if oil goes away, then most of the fabric that we have goes away because everything's made out of nylon. Oh, and plastics no longer exist. So I don't know how we're going to get past that. It's going to be a real weird world. We'll just put it that way.
Everything's connected anyway. So it's going to be crazy.
Yeah. But like I said, for me, it was definitely the natural element of that book that really stuck out. And, you know, he'll describe like fishing and hunting and things like that, which most people never get an experience to do. Like, I remember going out with a gun, you know, I was probably 12, I think, when I may have shot my first squirrel or something like that. Personally, I can't stop talking long enough to make hunting worthwhile. But I have no problem with people that do it. If we ever get to that world that he's talking about, I'll probably have to learn. But in the meantime. So we've talked a lot about the books. Do you have like a world in which these books that you've written kind of interrelate, or is the real connecting factor just the area?
So the real connecting like thing is the area, but I also, since they're like side by side, okay? So I like to have like certain characters, just their description, you know, like, oh, I saw somebody who had like coal black hair and she had kids. And if you know that, that's Shiloh from my first book, you know, just stuff like that. I like to have them correlate. You know, little Easter eggs for everybody who has read.
It's like this idea, like it's part of the background in the one book, but part of the foreground in another. Yes. Was it, I believe, Gerald's Game and I think Dolores Claiborne and Stephen King's World both have these things that happen in both the books because they're in the same town at the same time period.
Oh, yeah.
But like the books themselves have nothing to do with each other. It's just these little like you said, Easter eggs that kind of connect them. And they all happen kind of like in the background. And that's the fun part about reading to me.
That's my favorite thing. I love it. And I love whenever people point it out and was like, hey, was that like Shiloh or was that this character? I'm like, yeah, that was them. But, you know, I never really name them so it doesn't get confusing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Moving on, I guess, to more like the markety kind of things. I'm curious, what are the things that you found over the course of these two books that have worked really well for yourself as far as getting word out and, you know, getting new people buying the books?
So my first thing is I do everything I can. Like if it's online, I try to do like podcasts, I'm on the news, and I've definitely found social media is like a big thing. But everybody usually gravitates toward TikTok. I haven't had real success on TikTok, but I have on Facebook Reels. I've had about 3 videos hit over 4 million views on like talking about my books. But the thing is, I do little skits, you know, like talking about, like making it a story. If you put like videos and make it a story and keep people interested, I like putting these little snippets. I think that's been a really big factor for me. And then, like I said, reaching out to news companies has been a big, big thing for me. I've gotten very lucky and fortunate with having interviews and finding new readers that way.
Okay. Obviously we've talked like the centering it around West Virginia is definitely given you like an angle to work in these discussions. Like, I watch the news, the news videos I've seen up, and they're all tickled pink. I mean, it's probably the same way that I am. I am from West Virginia, and I'm excited for West Virginia for it. So, have there ever been any other, like, little deliberate things that you've chosen to do specifically toward that end to kind of know that you're going to have a built-in audience if you do things this way with the stories?
So I tried my best to market towards people who have been in a small town, like small town life. I see you. I've been there. I live in grew up in a very small town. I had no one around me for the longest time. And then I ended up moving with my mother whenever my family got divorced. And then I actually was in, we'll call it a town. It was not a town, you know, but everybody, I saw people. Okay. I lived in the country. The country. Back road were the only house, okay? But then I moved to a town, and I want people to be like, that's how I grew up. I grew up in a place where there's pretty much nobody. Everybody knew somebody, and I've been able to market that in, like, Tennessee and places like that as well. I've been on news sites with them and been able to reach a lot of people who just live that small-town life.
When you're looking for podcasts, out of curiosity, what methodology do you have for finding the ones that you know that you're going to resonate with? Like, is there key search terms that you use?
I used the matchmaker.com was one of the things that I used. And then they had like a category for books is one thing I did. And then I Google searched. I put like books and book marketing because I love to talk about marketing. And then I listened to the podcast to make sure, hey, I think I could like really vibe with this person or, you know, maybe not. But if I think I can have a good conversation, I usually try to reach out and have that conversation with somebody. I love to be on podcasts. That's one of my favorite things to do, honestly.
Well, I mean, I think people, especially if you're writing books, there's a certain degree of you that wants to connect with people. Mm-hmm. And it is probably one of the easiest ways to do it these days. I'm curious, like, have you, as far as like the marketing of your book, have you considered like doing any kind of podcasting yourself or what different things that you do to build the Storm Young brand? You know, do you have like the Young Mystery Solver Woman's podcast or something like that?
I had a podcast at one point with two of my friends. And it was every 5 seconds my kid was in the room. It made editing really hard. So I decided I'm going to wait until this year she's going to be in school. So I'm hoping to start that podcast back up in my little bit of free time I have. But I am on social media the most. I'm making little videos. If I can make 30-second videos and post them almost every day. So
awesome. Well, and I'm curious about it because like, I know personally the past 4 or 5 years have been just absolutely useless on social media for me. Like I joke with people like my most useful social media account these days is my LinkedIn, which is really weird. Like I used to be the one that I didn't touch for years at a time because nobody used LinkedIn, but now I get more activity on there than pretty much anywhere else, which is weird.
That is crazy.
For me and for me Facebook is just it might as well not even be there in most cases.
Really?
Like,
I love Facebook.
Yeah, just well, and it's one of those things that like depending on your market and your demographic, like some people use it, other people don't. I'm not entirely surprised that your demographic would actually be on there. It seems like the type of people that I mothers sharing photos of being your kids and stuff.
Yeah, it's
the easiest place to do that. So of course they're on Facebook still.
Yeah. And I love to, like I said, the reels, which is like the short videos. Facebook ends up pushing them. If you post so many, like I always call it spamming Facebook is what I do. I collect a whole bunch of videos and then just upload them at once. And then Facebook ends up pushing those videos like crazy. And it grows your audience. And it's pretty amazing, honestly.
See, you like the Facebook Reels platform then?
Yeah, I do. Definitely whenever you hit that bonus program.
I know that I watch them, so
yeah.
I don't necessarily get happy that I watch them. They do suck you in like a laser beam.
That's
tractor
the point.
Beam pulling you in. It is. One of the biggest things I've had to start doing is making the short form content. I'm personally a can we get a nice 4 or 5 hour podcast, really suck me in, I can enjoy it, feel out the conversation. The whole clickbaity nature of shorts is just kind of, do we really have to have discourse like this, folks?
Yeah.
But I also know that all the platforms are pushing it. Like, that's what everybody wants right now, is the short form content.
It absolutely is. And even Instagram is now going towards that, apparently, which I don't use that as much, but I heard it can blow up accounts like crazy too. So, yeah.
Well, they're all trying to compete with TikTok.
They are, which is the biggest platform for everybody. And I've seen so many authors post just little clips of their videos and make so much money from it.
Now, I'm curious, as an author, like, what do you post as far as short form content goes? Like, do you post readings, or do you just kind of post like wild stuff? And then, oh, I also have this other thing where I'm a I'm an author too. How does it function?
So I do a little bit of both. Like, I'll just post like readings from my books and behind the scenes, because I, like I said, I'm trying to do podcasts and like get ready with me's and stuff like that. But I also post like clips from the book, like a scene from the book, and it clickbait stuff, you know, trying to get people to say, oh, I found this missing. I had a dream about a missing woman was one of my videos. I had a dream about a missing woman, and I woke up one day and boom, it was a book. And people were like, a book about a missing woman, you know, and that led to people finding it. And then I also did another one where I talked about, I put something like, I had a pen pal and this pen pal went missing. And they're like, where did this woman go? I'm like, find out in my book, you know, stuff like that. as long as it's little clickbait stuff, it seems to work. It's a pain to do, but it seems to work.
Okay. Now, is there anything that you've kind of done so far that you feel like was a complete and utter waste of your time as far as marketing goes? Like, it was stupid. I'll never do it again. Don't waste your time.
I hate to say it because I know my grandparents love it, but newspapers. I reach out to every single newspaper in West Virginia, every one of them. Okay. And it didn't seem like it helped with any of my sales, even if they had book categories, because I know some of them have like certain categories. We're like, hey, this author wrote a book. You should check it out. It did nothing for me. And like I said, I found each email myself. I wasted like 8 hours doing that and sending emails. So that's something I don't really recommend if you're trying to like sell books. And I kind of regret doing that, but it was a learning lesson.
I'm curious, did you get write-ups in any of these, the papers themselves, or?
Yeah, I got a good bit of them, honestly, but it still didn't seem to do much.
Well, we'll just say, if nothing else, that'll give you Instagram content, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it did. That was my main thing for it. After I realized it didn't, like, give sales, I took, like, a screen grab from the newspapers. I was like, I was in the newspaper.
Well, and what it also does, while it doesn't work for that, you know, I'd imagine taking hashtagging the city or whatever that newspaper was in, you know, throwing it up on there, has to put some extra eyes on you that, oh, I don't read the newspaper, but hey, we're here on Instagram. I'll go over here and read this book that has something to do about this.
Yeah. And I try to do that as much as possible, but you know, sometimes I don't get the clips or stuff like that, because usually the newspapers don't tell you that you're in it. Somebody has to tell me that I was in it.
Oh, hey, I saw you.
Yeah, that's usually what happens. Like, I have family all across West Virginia, and usually I'll just get that random phone call. Hey, did you know you were in this paper? Well, no, they didn't let me know, but I messaged them, so that's good to know.
Well, it's been awesome having you on here, Storm. Why don't you tell us, first off, where can people find your books? What are your books? And are you working on something else right now, or are you just kind of in a holding pattern until the next thing comes along?
So my next book is actually going to my editor in 2 days. So that's going to be coming out very soon. I'm very excited for book 3. And it's my first sequel. I've never written a sequel. So I'm really hoping it's something good. You know, I'm very proud of this one. So my 2 books that are out right now are The Pen Pal, A West Virginia Mystery, and The Final Secret, A West Virginia Mystery. Both of them, I think, are very good if you like a good mystery. But I say mothers, if you want to read something more mother-based, go to The Pen Pal. If you want something more small town mystery for everybody, read The Final Secret. That's what I'll put out there a little teaser for that. You guys can find them on Amazon. I have the audiobook, the ebook, and the paperback out.
Oh, so you did actually do the audiobook.
Yes, I did. I found people on ACX, which is like the thing through Amazon. And I got very lucky with finding people.
I'm giving you a big high five here because so many people don't go that extra mile. And I think that the way that people consume books now, it's, I don't feel like you can skip the audiobook portion of it.
You can't. Absolutely because not.
Do you have any stats on like what percentage of your sales are in audiobooks versus the other versions at all?
So I would say it is about half with the paperback. Because I know the ebooks are the highest. Ebooks will always be, I think, the highest at this point with Kindle being able to do it like on your phone and everything. But paperbacks and the audiobooks are pretty much side by side with sales.
Nice.
It's definitely worth it.
Well, as I said, thank you so much for coming on, Storm, and sharing with us. It'll help my people learn more about the book process and, more importantly, the part about actually selling books because it's so easy to make the books these days, but no one goes that extra mile to say, how do I make people buy it?
And thank you so much for having me. I had a wonderful time.
Do you fancy yourself the next Tolkien, Lewis, or Barker? Maybe you just have something subversive to say. Hopefully this podcast is helping you. But maybe your ambitions are just a little bigger than you can handle on your own. Head over to ironagemarketing.com and let Nikki P. help ensure your book doesn't release to nobody.